Hi, I'm Chris Kepler, and welcome to Does This Happen to You? I'm an actor, voice actor, audiobook narrator, and writer. I love telling and sharing stories about the strange experiences my friends and I have while doing mundane things like grocery shopping. That's why this podcast features funny stories from fantastic writers about our daily anomalies, a micro audiobook about life and befuddlement just for you. Our story this week is from Adeline DeMond, who you'll find on Medium.com. And here is, I Adopted the Wrong Dog. Meet Fish, my boss. Don't freak out about the headline. Fish doesn't know he's the wrong dog. I'm the only one agonizing about our relationship. As far as Fish is concerned, my house is a pretty nice hotel, although the staff could be better trained. Fish, not his real name, came into my life, or perhaps I should say I dropped into his, on a cold day in March. I had just put down my beloved apricot-colored shepherd, Millie, also not her real name. I understand a dog dying is agony for everyone, but Millie's case was all the more unimaginable because it's pretty clear the emergency vet killed her. I know I sound unhinged when I say that, but the vet gave me a lot of money back, so it's pretty clear they knew they killed her too. After Millie died, I knew what kind of hollow grief was ahead of me. I'm not new to dead animals. I knew I was susceptible to really bad decisions, and I knew I should wait to get another dog. Even though we were deep in a pandemic, a dogless life is a perfect time to travel. Why not try out that pink hotel in Hawaii? Or rent a beach house that Millie could never have shared, because she was too slobbery and hairy and somehow, no matter what the season, always muddy. But as dog people know, waiting to get another dog is not possible. A dogless house is unsurvivable. The days after Millie died are a blur, but I remember soon realizing that I would drop dead if there wasn't a dog in my house. So I went to Plan B. If I wasn't going to travel, at least I could try to get Millie 2.0. Soon there was the endless scrolling on Pet Finder, Instagram, the reaching out to rescues. The rescue where Millie came from started sending photos of new dogs saying, I know it's soon, but... It was all a jumbled mess until about 9 days after Millie died. I saw a video of a sleek little dog, then named Elvis but now named Fish, with legs for miles, trying to curl himself up into the tiniest ball possible, while imprisoned at the Lancaster Animal Shelter, a very cold, very windy, very loud place in the desert. The whites of his eyes were showing, and I don't think I've ever seen any sentient being more frightened. Elvis slash Fish was trying to curl himself into a tiny ball so that he could hide in a bed made of a recycled blue plastic tub. There was something about the blue plastic tub and the whites of his eyes that made me think, no, just no, this dog cannot stay there. Soon, I was working with a rescue to break Elvis slash Fish out of the clink with the idea that I would foster him until the rescue found a suitable adopter. I was still looking for Millie's clone, so he wasn't staying. Of course, when I say foster, I mean pretending the arrangement is temporary until some family wants to take my dog, then freaking out and adopting him myself, which is exactly what happened. When I got to the shelter, I learned that Fish had been adopted at 2 months old, returned at 7 months old, and had spent the last 2 months in the shelter. Because half my brain was filled with Millie grief, and the other half was filled with Elvis slash Fish trying to disappear in a blue plastic bucket, I didn't do the obvious math. Fish was only 9 months old. Fish was a fucking puppy. Listen, I don't have the bandwidth to deal with the most well-adjusted puppy, let alone a dog who is super fucked up from being adopted and then returned. Fish hates men more than anything in the whole wide world, and I often wonder what must have happened during those 5 months he was adopted. But I hadn't done the math and wasn't thinking about whether I could handle a puppy. I was, instead, fantasizing that Fish would be my adventure dog because he was so athletic-looking. I imagined Instagram photos of us at the top of mountain peaks. I imagined hiking with him in the hills behind my house every morning. I decided Fish was now my new personal trainer. And Fish turned out to be my trainer all right, just not the hiking kind. When I opened my car door, Elvis/Fish jumped in like a criminal making a break for it. I swear I heard him say, "Step on it, lady." Then he promptly fell asleep. I put on Simon and Garfunkel because dogs really like them. If you don't believe me, put on Scarborough Fair next time your dog is in the car. For a moment, while Fish snoozed in my back seat, I thought that maybe he was a chill dog. Nope. Turns out Fish has no chill. He is a hellraiser. He hates men. He hates walks. He hates food, unless it's homemade. He refuses to go out in the rain, even to go potty. He doesn't care about chew toys, unless chew toy means embroidered vintage Fendi heels. He has also decided that he is now a guard dog, which is great, I guess, except he practically crashed through the window because someone had the nerve to stand across the street. You know how your therapist is always telling you to define and maintain your boundaries? Fish has that shit down. Fish came with a rider that rivals the most famous rock bands. He is the guy who will make you pick out the green M&Ms. When I realized that Fish refused to eat the fanciest of dog foods, I tried to Jewish grandmother him by half yelling, half singing. I guess it's a long way from the Lancaster Animal Shelter if you won't eat the latest fancy dog food. And the evergreen, "What? You want that I should make you homemade food?" Yes, it turns out that, as a matter of fact, Fish did want me to make him homemade dog food. Somehow, he was able to sustain a hunger strike for so long that it eventually broke down and became someone who makes homemade dog food. Hats off to Fish, who now dines on slow-simmered beef and sweet potatoes. And yes, I add a nutritional powder. Again, don't freak out. I suppose I could do the right thing and make it clear to Fish that I'm in charge. We all know that this is the only way to make dogs secure and happy. We've all been taught that we must be pack leaders, that dogs love structure, that they want you to tell them what to do, blah, 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 etc., and so forth. I could force Fish to interact with men, make him go on walks on busy streets, give him whatever food I wanted, knowing that when he got hungry enough, he'd eventually eat. I could drag him outside in the rain. I know this is what I'm supposed to do. I've had enough horses and dogs to know this. But telling Fish that I'm in charge would be a lie. When I got Fish, I was tired. I was exhausted with grief for Millie and in the throes of one of the stupidest romances of all my stupid romances. And I'm still kinda tired. Plus, if I'm honest, all the dire warnings that you will fuck up your dog if you aren't a constant drill sergeant has never been my experience. Instead, my last two dogs, Moose and Millie, became great dogs once they realized that they had a permanent place to live and I was nice to them. That's basically all it took. While Moose was always a good boy, Millie started our relationship by ripping out all the original molding in my house, barking long and loud enough to have the neighbors threaten to call animal control, and taking a shit on my bed. But then one day she just pulled it together, and I hadn't really done anything special other than stick it out. Millie and I settled into an easy coexistence, and like childbirth, I forgot what a monster she was at the beginning. Now, months after she died, I still cry when I think about how Millie used to bury my sweatpants, boxes of pasta, and loaves of bread in the backyard, prepping for some sort of doom. I cry when I think about how she would lean her head against me to tell me she loved me, and her patiently tolerating me hugging her back. She was the goodest girl, the best pandemic companion I could have ever asked for. All it took was patience for her to become the best dog ever. But somehow I forget this lesson every time Fish disappoints me. I desperately want him to make me feel better about Millie. And so whenever he behaves differently than her, I freak out and decide he's the wrong dog. When Fish makes it clear he does not want to go on walks, I freak out and think about how much fatter I'm going to get without a dog who wants to walk. I mean, who has ever heard of a dog who doesn't want to walk? Millie would have walked across the United States if you let her. When Fish recently refused to go outside in a rainstorm, including to go to the bathroom, it made me miss Millie so acutely I had to go lie down. Millie would have gone out in tornado. When Fish recently made it clear that he hates men, all of them, I remembered how Millie loved everyone, to a fault. I started to complain to anyone who would listen that Fish was the wrong dog and that I had fucked up by adopting him. Then a few folks asked, "Are you going to give him back?" And I was aghast. Of course not. Jesus. Fish and I got married the day we drove back from the desert listening to Bridge Over Troubled Water. The question astounded me. I am not giving him back. I am making peace with the fact that Fish is now my organizing principle. And as principles go, it could be worse. My life is now organized by a dog who looks like a cross between a bat and a seal, even though the DNA test says that he is pure pit bull on his daddy's side and his mom is a combo of German Shepherd / Husky / Rottweiler / American Staffordshire. No seal or bat or fish DNA at all. And boy, has Fish organized things. Men no longer come over to my house. It's surprisingly fine, in part because Fish started to teach me something about each man he met. Some were cool that he hated them, and they mercifully ignored him. But others couldn't stand that a dog didn't like them. Their ego couldn't survive it, and they tried to win him over. When this didn't work, some guys even had the nerve to tell me that I had a messed up dog. Yeah, no. Hashtag bye, Felipe. This taught me everything I needed to know about these men. Thanks, Fish. Fish hates walks in the neighborhood because there are too many people in cars, but he'll tolerate a hike in nature. So now I find myself in nature a lot more often. Fish has not changed his standards about food, so I find myself making a batch of homemade dog food every few days, and somehow now I'm cooking for myself more often, too. And in a small victory in the fight against loneliness, Fish doesn't seem to care about my legendary snoring, so he curls up next to me every night, his little bat head sharing my pillow. Yes, Fish is the wrong dog. But he is now my organizing principle. He has forced me to change, even though I hate changing. And if something is going to throw a monkey wrench into my life, if for no other reason to teach me to put my vintage Fendi shoes away, it might as well be a cute little bat / seal / dog like Fish. Now, if you'll excuse me, I need to make Fish's favorite beef and sweet potato dish. He dines promptly at 5. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the story, let me know and share it with your friends. Follow me at ChrisKKArya on Twitter or Chris K. Kepler on Facebook. Or check out my website, www.chriskepler.com.